Who's Jelly?
I had a pretty bad accident.
Nah.
And I saw the ambulances arrive.
Crashed into a barrier. His car exploded.
Like, my heart just, like, stopped.
You guys are risking your lives.
He knows a little bit too much.
I used to watch Quebo Cop.
Ah, yes! Yes!
Both of you guys.
This looks different.
It does look different, Jelly.
Why are you so far away from me, Josh?
Because we've got two people in between us.
Oh
today.
My God. I didn't even see them.
And I think we know who they are because it's on their t-shirts.
Oh, wow. Repping the merch.
This is the Fittipaldi brothers.
Fittipaldi. What a name. And I can't believe they're so this here.
This is Pietro and this is Enzo.
Welcome, guys.
Jelly, this is the bit where Jelly introduces you guys. And yeah. It's either awful or it's half. So go for it, Jay.
Well, before we introduce our guests, I quickly want to say we love you and all of the support you've been giving us. Follow us on social media.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to do that.
Get on our Spotify, rate us 5 stars if you're enjoying the show. Subscribe to our YouTube because we've got some crazy episodes coming up.
We keep forgetting to say this.
But this one, this one might be about to be our best one yet.
Oh,
wow. He started off very well.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Pietro.
But you've got to introduce the guest, Jelly.
Today, I can't believe I'm saying this, that these words are coming out of my mouth. We've got professional drivers here with us today. Pietro, 26-year-old reserve driver in Formula One. We've got an F1 driver here with us for Team Haas. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm such a huge fan, Pietro. I can't believe you're sitting on the sofa here.
Well, we raced together virtually, though.
Yeah,
I remember
we did.
That was a couple years ago.
We'll get into that. Yeah. We'll get into that. We've also got Enzo here. What's up, Enzo?
How's it going?
21-year-old, a little bit younger, the younger brother of Pietro, Formula 2 driver.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Dude, we got Formula guys here sitting.
So, quick question on that. So you guys are professional drivers. Isn't like someone who drives a taxi, they're also a professional driver as well, right?
Josh, are you
kidding? They're a professional driver, but for comfort. You know? It's that Sunday drive, you're just getting to your destination.
So you guys aren't comfortable when you drive?
No, I mean, I think I'm more comfortable than Enzo.
Why is that?
No, dude, even João, our videographer who was here, we were in Portugal, we were saying that you're too aggressive.
Ooh!
Yeah.
Wow, we're throwing the shots immediately.
Oh, no, John's joking. There's no way. Very
we're only a minute in, and the sibling rivalry is flying out.
We'll get into all the
smooth
details.
I'm smooth.
You're a smooth driver?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Josh, I'm not sure. Like, we need to. I just want to get some things clear here. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a huge F1 fan. I think I know a lot about the sport in general. I've been to a lot of races. Now, Josh, on the other side of this room, he doesn't know a lot about F1 or the Formula Series in general.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what our viewers know. We don't know, like, essentially, we've never really talked about anything sports on this podcast before or in our content. So I don't know if the people who are watching right now know a lot about Formula 1, know a lot about Formula 2, know a lot about racing. So I think it's very important that whatever we talk about today, it's kind of a little bit surface level, you know?
Because that's the thing, you know, I understand what F1 is and F2 and driving cars fast in circles over and over. I get the idea of it. And I think it looks really cool. I don't understand it, but I want to like it. And that's, I think, it's going to be good because we've got a lot of viewers here that are probably in the same boat. So I'm kind of challenging you both today to get me interested and to help me understand.
Wow.
Does that sound like a good challenge?
Do
you guys hang out with a lot of people that like have no idea about it, or are you guys usually only talk to people about
No,
racing?
Honestly, I grew up with going to school in the US. They weren't, now they are a bit more because of Netflix, but before they didn't really understand Formula One.
Yeah.
Wouldn't follow Formula One. So when I was growing up karting and stuff, people are like, yeah, so what do you do? I race karts. Also, you race NASCAR. It's like, no, it's more like going to the Formula One route. They're like, what's that?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had a lot of friends growing up that didn't know anything about Formula One.
So can you guys tell us a little bit about your growing up story? Because you guys got born with this
congratulations
golden
on that, by
ticket
the way.
Of a name. You know, I mean, Fittipaldi is a huge name in the sport. And can you guys tell us a little bit, like, you guys are American Brazilian, right? Like, what, like,
basically, take it from there.
I am
give us
I am
the backstory.
Lost.
Give us
I'm
the backstory.
Lost. Yeah.
All right. I'll start because I was born first.
That's fair.
That's no, a good one. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. No, so we were born in Miami. Okay. But obviously, our family, you know, they're from Brazil. And we grew up in Miami. When I was four, that's when I first started karting. But when I was born, actually, was the year my grandfather stopped racing. So my grandfather raced in Formula One, raced in IndyCar. And in 1996, he had a big accident in Michigan and broke his back and part of his neck. So he had to stop. So when I was born, he wasn't racing, but I had both my uncles racing. And
what was the name of your grandfather? Sorry?
Emerson Fittipaldi.
Right. And that's a very it's popular name.
He's one of the legends, right? Essentially, right? Yeah. I mean... Yeah. Two-time Formula One champion, Indy 500 winner. Mm-hmm. Is it called Indy 500 champion or Indy 500 winner?
Winner.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Josh, you mentioned racing in circles.
Yes.
Yeah. Formula One is much more in depth than that, but I'm Indy 500 is literally just racing circles.
It's a circle.
Okay. It's quite literally an oval, yeah. And they do 200 laps or 500 laps?
It's 200 laps.
They do 200 laps. On this circle, and I think the average speed is like, what, is it 180, 190? No,
230.
230?
Yeah.
230 miles per hour?
Yeah, miles per hour.
Josh, average speed.
Jelly, I'm going to
200 laps. Jelly. Just drive in circles,
mate. I think I'm going to say what we're all thinking here.
What?
But I know you're excited.
Oh, sorry.
Right? But we have two incredible guests here today. I don't really know why they're incredible, but I'm gonna find that out. And I wanna hear all that stuff from them. Okay.
I'll shut up.
Basically.
Wait, Jelly right. knows it. I'm impressed. He knows
he knows a lot about
it. He knows a lot. Yeah. Now I think there's gonna be a bit more to this today. I think Jelly is he wants to prove himself to you guys, you know?
And we're gonna have to give
him the space for that, but yeah, continue on where you're going for it. Broke their back.
Yeah, so basically, my granddad stopped racing when I was born, but I grew up watching both my uncles race.
Right.
And they were, you know, racing IndyCar and Daytona 24 Hours, so other types of racing. And I grew up watching them, and that was kind of what fed me into, you know, I want to start racing somehow. So I got my first go-kart when I was four. You know, those little go-karts take around the track. And I would go like once every 2 months just to, you know, go on the go-kart. As I started getting older, I was like 6, 7, started going like once a month, once a week, twice a week. I would start going, you know, every day after school to go practice. My mom would take me. And then when I was 7, 8, that's when we first started competing.
Right.
And it basically started from there.
Wow.
And Enzo's 5 years younger than me, so.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was basically how I started was... Obviously, yeah, my brother is older than me, and I would go watch the races when I was like, since I was born, basically, I would go watch my brother race.
Yeah.
And when I was about 3 years old, that's when my dad gave me the opportunity to drive a go-kart for the first time.
So did you get like a brand new go-kart, or did you get his go-kart?
I got his.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. But he was so small, man. Like,
yeah,
honestly.
But how did that feel? Was that your first hand-me-down?
It felt great. Man, I was three.
He was like 3 years old, dude.
I was 3 years old.
I'm tired of this hand-me-down.
Do you remember things when you were 3 years old?
No,
but it felt like the first memories I have of racing was probably in a little track called Opa-Locka.
It's in Florida. It's a little town in Florida.
Well, I was driving around, and then I see someone just upside down and with their head stuck under the go-kart and like passing out on the go-kart. And I'm just driving by and I had no idea what was going on because I was only 4 years old. And it's my brother's flipped over.
I can't believe you remember that. Yeah. That was the first and the only time I ever flipped.
And it's just that's his first ever memory.
Yeah.
And I remember he was like twitching with his neck and the go-kart was over him. And his throttle was stuck. So it was like,
because I had a massive mark on my neck. I can't believe you remember.
Yeah, and I remember I was driving by and I was like very young and I looked, man, that's pretty cool.
There's nothing in, you didn't stop to go and help him, flip him over
again. No, I just kept driving. I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. If you knew it was your brother, would you have stopped?
He knew it was me.
He just thought I was.
Yeah. He's okay. All right. Yeah. He's got
it. It was normal. I was very young. Right. So I was, yeah.
But you were okay, Pietro?
Yeah, that was the only time I ever flipped. It was the first and only time. But it was okay. But it was a small cart, but it landed on top of me. Yeah. So I was just waiting for, I was like shouting my mechanic's name. My mechanic's name at the time was Jefferson. So I was like, Jefferson.
Yeah.
Jefferson. But I was fine at the end. I just had a mark on my neck. I remember going to school the day after there and it was like.
How did you flip it?
Dude, yeah, I went to pass somebody and what happens in carts sometimes is if you tangle the wheels, right. Like if you get the front wheel on the guy's rear wheel, it kind of like launches you.
Oh, so that's pretty sick.
Josh is like, when can I sign up?
I'm pretty sure I've done launched. That. I'm pretty sure I've done that in GTA 5 before. So yeah. Maybe I understand what you guys are talking about.
It's got launched, yeah.
So did you, was your family kind of pushing you guys towards racing things? Because like, obviously you got a history in it. Like, did they kind of want you to be doing the karts? Obviously you got the karts as a gift or something. Was there kind of like an expectation that you guys were going to be racing?
No, honestly, you know, for me, it was, I really wanted to do it. And I played, like my mom always put us in, my mom always took us everywhere. Like every weekend she was with us at the go-kart tracks, my dad as well. But basically like she put us in every different type of sport. So I played a lot of soccer, basketball. I loved basketball. But I just always loved racing a little bit more. So the older I got, the more time I put into it. And I guess for my brother it was the same.
Yeah, it was the same. It was just, you know.
It was like natural, yeah.
Yeah, it was natural. I think my parents never forced us to do anything. I think for me, it was more like, oh, my big brother's doing something really cool, you know, driving go-karts.
Flipping them over.
Yeah, flipping them over. And I'm like, you know, I want to do what my big brother's doing.
And you want to do it better.
Yeah, I wanted to do it better. And obviously, when I first did the first races, you know, and you fall in love with it. I fell in love with it, you know, in the first race, just the competition, the adrenaline you get. It's really, I don't know, it's a strange, it's difficult to explain it and to replicate the adrenaline you get in a race in real life. So it's a really, was an amazing time when I was young. I think those were the best memories.
Racing. Yeah. So seriously. Where do you go from there? You guys, you know, you mentioned, you know, you started with doing some go-karting, right? Or some go-karting, but you had your own go-kart. You're essentially training, practicing for what? What was it when you're that age, when you're that young, what do you look at? What's
the evolution of that?
Yeah, so basically, you know, you start karting and you start with like club series. So you go to the local track and you're there racing kind of, they have a race, you know, 2-3 times a month.
You just sign up.
Yeah, you sign up and you race and obviously, depending on your age, there's different classes.
Yeah.
So you go from there. Then if you start getting more competitive, you go to bigger championships. So there was a big one in Florida called the Florida Winter Tour. And people from everywhere around the world come to race that. So we would do that. We would do, you know, national championships. And occasionally we would go and start doing like world championship races. But the karting, like high level karting, I think the highest level is in Europe. But we never had the funding to go to Europe, like to go and travel to Europe to start racing. So we always did everything in the States. And
that's an interesting point. Yeah. So are you making money when you win a race?
No. So in karting, no. So it was all like my parents, my dad, I mean, he dedicated his life like just and still, you know, working with us and finding sponsorship and being able to like fund it. Because in karting, you can somewhat do it. But once you start leveling up, the more competitive it gets, you need better equipment.
Sure.
Then you go from carts to cars, and then it's like a whole different level.
Yeah, like Josh doesn't know much about this sport.
Yeah.
But, you know, touching on karting, it's an expensive sport.
Yeah,
And a lot of people have to fund it themselves, Josh.
So I think that's an interesting point. So does that mean that generally speaking, it is like wealthier people that do that?
No, I think that once it gets to a certain level, it is. And definitely like in Europe, I think, because in Europe, everybody does it at like the maximum level. I mean, the changing chassis, like the actual cart, they're changing the cart almost every race.
Right.
When for us, it was fresh like I was racing with like 2-year-old carts and then passing my cart down to my brother. And I think a lot of people in the States had more of that mentality. Yeah. So it was a lot more people could do it. But then the next level is then when you go from carts to cars, then that's when you actually need like proper funding to then,
got it.
You know, you need the money to be able to do it. And whether that's from sponsors or from like family money, it depends on everybody's situation.
Right. So I assume like, especially when you're that young, sponsors are probably interested in having you when you're really good and they see a future in you. They want to get you when you're young and kind of try to stay with you, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how this business works.
Yeah, it's how it works, but it's very difficult to find that. I think like when you're young and karting, it's like, how are you going to sell that dream to someone, you know? So at that time, it was all like my dad, like, putting in all his effort and, you know, everything he would make, he would put back into us to like follow our.
So when did that for you? When was that transition between the karting to the cars?
Yeah. So because we didn't have the funding to go to Europe to start racing like Formula 4 or Formula 3, which is the beginning. It's like the ladder series to F1.
Right.
I actually started racing NASCAR. So when I was 14, I started racing these like big NASCAR 500 horsepower cars. So they were like really big cars.
14, Josh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty young to drive a big car like that. Yeah.
And I went to North Carolina to start racing them because NASCAR, it's all in North Carolina. And I won a championship there when I was 15. And I was racing against like guys who are my age now and stuff. So I adapted really well. And they were oval racing. So it was like...
Right.
Very small tracks.
Do you need a driver's license?
No, you don't. You just need a racing license.
Yeah. Right. We'll get into the license thing in a little bit. But this is some weird facts about this sport. A lot of these young guys, they don't actually have driver's licenses, Josh.
Well, in the Formula series is
like, even. Yes.
You don't need a driver's license before you can get into a race car. You only need a race license.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you can get by getting points.
Yeah, and I think you can get it now. It used to be 14 before, now it's 15 years old.
So right. we'll get into the details of that a little bit later. But tell us about, going from karting into cars like NASCAR. What So then you're 14 years old. You're in a NASCAR. I assume potentially sponsors starting to look at you. You want to go bigger with the ultimate goal, I assume, being a Formula driver. Starting in Formula 4, F2, and eventually F1.
Yeah, so basically when I won that championship there in NASCAR, that gave me the opportunity to then go to Europe because I joined a program who a lot of guys know, Sergio Perez, who was in Red Bull.
Yeah.
When he went to Europe from Mexico, he was funded by a program from the Telmex program, which is funded by Carlos Slim. You know, he's from Mexico and he loves Formula One and he funded all the Mexican drivers and brought Sergio Perez and Esteban Gutierrez to Formula One. And he was involved in NASCAR. So when I won the championship, he said, Pietro, I want to give you the opportunity to go race in Europe.
Wow.
And then that's when I came and I moved to England in 2013.
So that was the kickstart.
That was the kickstart.
Yeah.
So not, I would have never had the chance to come.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So you were probably around 10 years old. When he moved, Enzo, you were 10 years old when he moved to the UK.
I was about 8.
No, when I moved to the UK, you were 10, 11. Yeah.
So you were, then when you moved, you were 15.
16. Yeah. 16,
yeah. So what did you think? Big bros moving out of town bros moving out to Europe to chase this dream, right?
I was, I was racing bandoleros at the time.
What is a bandolero?
It's a funny name.
Yeah. What is it?
My brother was going to Europe, I was in the road to NASCAR.
So he followed me as well.
But I was racing the smaller NASCARs. They were called Bandoleros and Legend Cars.
What?
In ovals.
Well, if you look them up, they're funny looking cars.
So when my brother was racing in Hickory at a small track that's near our house in North Carolina, and he was racing like late models, our goal at that time was to make it to Sprint Cup.
Yeah, to NASCAR.
NASCAR. So the highest level of...
because we didn't have the chance to go to Europe. So we were like, let's do everything for NASCAR.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys, like you said, you guys were still young. What about school?
Yeah, school was there. I was doing it, finishing, you know, without school.
But it's more of a B plan. It's more of a plan B.
Yeah, we had, I think, when I was, you know, 11 years old, obviously I was, school was, you know, without doing the school, you know, there's no racing. My dad was always very strict about it. So
it's my dad, they were getting so many fights, man. This guy would hide homework.
honestly, you were so difficult with school. Like, it was unbelievable.
No, I didn't. I really enjoyed going to school to, you know, see my friends and all that. But then whenever they came to like
whenever I had to learn anything, I was like, nah, this ain't it.
Give me the card.
No, I was good in school, but like the homework and stuff, like it wasn't, I remember I didn't really enjoy it that much.
But you finished high school. Yeah.
I'm a dropout.
Oh yeah,
yeah, okay.
I'm did you finish at high school though, or
we don't really have high school in Europe.
Yeah, you finished high school.
I finished something like high school, the equivalent of high school.
Okay.
I quit when I was 17, so I don't know when you finish high school in the U.S.
So your next step would be go to
college, or uni.
Oh, that's where we stopped.
That's where we stopped. Yeah. All right. Well, I went to a college for about half a year, and I was like, nah.
Did you? Go
I
to
finished
college?
Like 2 years of the 2 year. Program of college.
So he's much smarter than all of us here. That's how this works.
Infinite, yeah, I know.
That's how this works.
No, we're still YouTubers, so there's a limit on the
Yeah.
So you guys, if I understand correctly, you guys used to live together.
No. So, well, this depends on how you... So
slept in the same bed.
No, we didn't.
Really?
No. So the first step was Jelly lived with Quebelcop, who was an ex-member of the group. And then there was a period of time where we, in inverted commas, moved in with each other in New York. But as we revealed in an earlier episode, that was actually not true.
We clickbaited everything, man.
Yeah.
Maybe it's
we were
fun.
Just on a trip.
Maybe it's fun to actually, before we continue talking about like your guys' career, maybe I kind of want to ask, like how did we even end up here? Like, I know these guys from something, but I want to find out, before we met, wherever we met, that we haven't really mentioned yet, did you guys know who we were, or?
Yes.
Yes!
No, I
I'm
did.
I'm doing my job correctly.
So I used to watch you guys, like, I think 6-7 years ago. I used to watch, and I'm going to be honest, I used to watch Quebelcop.
No.
A lot.
Yeah. Oh, no! The reason this the name of this podcast is two-thirds, because Quebelcop left us, man. Okay. He's that
like, before
remaining
coming
third.
Here, Enzo was like, do you think Quebelcop is going to be there?
No! We're gonna have to have a serious chat after that.
I'm not sure how I feel about this. Yeah.
So anyway, you were a big Quebelcop fan. What were you watching of his stuff?
No, I would watch his vlogs.
What? Nobody watched his vlogs.
Yeah, he did like I remember once he did a tour of his house or something. It was in remember where it was, but I remember I'd watch his his game. It was a lot of his gameplays, but whenever he would post like a vlog or something, I would always
okay.
So did you watch his vlogging channel? Because he had a second channel.
Yes, yeah, so I wasn't into the gaming side. I would watch his more of his. He would post a lot about his he'd do vlogs. I remember.
So fun fact. Producer Ben over here used to edit those vlogs.
Yeah, so I used to watch those vlogs. Yeah. So that's probably why.
Ben hasn't got a mic on today because we.
Great content.
Yeah.
He said great content. Yeah.
So that's probably why I didn't know too much about you guys, because it was probably not so much
on the gaming side.
Okay, but there's been some vlogs. So me and Quebelcop, we lived in the same house. And it was this kind of YouTuber house. I was 17 at the time when I moved in with him. And we just, like our careers are just literally playing games and screaming as loud as possible into a camera. That's basically what we do. Hmm. So Pietro, did you know like of our stuff?
No. Or... So the thing was, remember in 2020, there was the pandemic, everything was under quarantine.
Yeah,
so Formula One started doing this like virtual F1 championship.
Yeah.
Where every team would invite like their pro driver and a streamer or, you know, some sort of celebrity. And then you were racing for
McLaren.
Yes.
Yeah. With Lando Norris, I'm pretty sure he was there.
Yeah. And there was a couple sessions that we were doing.
But this was on a game, sorry.
Yeah. F1 game.
Okay. So, okay. I'll quickly explain it to Josh. All right. Pandemic.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Formula One's like, no, we can't do this. Okay. We can't travel. The world's in lockdown. But yeah. Formula One's like, we want to give people a show. So they did a virtual F1. Yeah.
Right.
Virtual. Okay. And this time, not all the drivers were like, too excited to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of the drivers have simulator rigs in their house.
Yep.
And they joined virtually. And because not all drivers were coming, they replaced them with other people.
Right.
And I was a McLaren driver, dude. Let's go.
Yeah, I remember the time because we would do practice sessions before the races, right?
Yeah.
And I was there doing a practice session. We were streaming on Twitch.
Yeah.
And we had this, one of our good friends is Gao Leis. He's one of the biggest Twitch streamers. And he was there practicing with us as well. And then out of nowhere, we're in the session, and there comes up a Jelly joins the session. And the first thing he says, like in Portuguese, like, who's Jelly? And then I was like, no, Jelly races for McLaren. And we're like, is it actually the actual Jelly?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
And then we remember that, like, and then we tried getting in touch and it was actually Jelly. And then we ended up racing together. It was so cool.
So I think the Formula One team who was hosting this virtual race, they basically opened the server for people to join to practice.
Right.
And you guys were in the server.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And I was just joined. And then you guys were streaming on Twitch and I didn't know that. I don't remember how I found you guys. Oh, I remember. So basically I joined the server and I saw your guys' name. I was like, who are they? Are they talking? And then I found out that the Discord channel that was hosted by Formula One, you guys were in a voice channel. I just decided to join that.
And then I remember we were live. And I was like, oh my God.
That was fun, man. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a
good
time.
Was I any good?
You did really well.
You were very good. Oh, actually.
Are you just saying that?
No, seriously.
I think he was one of the better, streamers.
I think you were almost scoring points, or you did score some.
Yeah, I think I crashed in the end, but I was doing pretty well
because you were with the controller.
Yeah, so I have like a rig, but at the time that Formula One invited me for this, I wasn't in the same place where my rig is. Okay. I was traveling at the time, and which means I had to race with controller. And so I just wanted to like kind of warm myself up because in the rig, I'm used to it, but not
the controller. So difficult.
Pietro Enzo, can you explain? You said he almost scored points. What does that mean?
So basically, in Formula One, to score a point, you need to finish in the top 10. So,
and there's 20 cars racing.
Yeah. So if you finish 10th, you score 1 point. If you finish 9th, you score 2. 8th is 4. And so on.
Okay. And first place, you get 25 points.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And these points, Josh, they matter for the championship.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So 1 year is one championship.
So Jelly was how many? Like, so Jelly was not in the top 10.
No, he was getting. I think he was close. That you were almost scoring the top 10. And the difficult thing is, like, out of the 20 cars, there, I think there was like 10 pros. So then, like, for you to score,
so he would have had to beat a pro.
I was like the best content creator.
You were the best content creator.
Which, hypothetically speaking, I'm also the best content creator in this show.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, but we're not the only content creators on the couch, though.
No, I'm worse than them, too. Also,
Well, but the viewers don't know, but you guys also do content yourselves, right?
Yes. Yeah, we do.
So you guys brought your vlogging camera guy here.
Yeah, Joel is our videographer. He travels with us to most of our races.
That's amazing.
So we have our Portuguese channel, you know, the Fittipaldi Brothers on YouTube, and we vlog every race weekend, Formula One, F2, and my World Endurance Championship stuff. And now we just started as well the English channel.
You guys' English is great.
Thank you.
Seriously? Yeah,
what do you mean? You guys like lived in America? Like,
but we wanted to do it in English as well because not a lot of drivers, do it. But we love creating the content and stuff. Yeah. So we have all the behind the scenes, like following the race weekend, Formula 2, Formula 1 with Haas, and we were just in Portugal.
When you say you got an English one, like, are you now stopping the Portuguese one to do the English one, or are you doing both?
We're doing both.
How you do? You say one line and then you say it in the other language.
Yeah, so we try to take different occasions and like prioritize in the racing. Like this, like we'll speak more English on the camera, and this will speak more Portuguese. And it's all like kind of raw, behind the scenes of like going, start waking up at the hotel,
meeting your teammate for breakfast, going to the track.
Brush your teeth in Portuguese and brush your teeth in English.
Yeah,
basically. I actually like, because to Josh, this is very foreign, essentially, but there's content creators in Monaco doing the same thing. They record in French and in English.
Yeah,
and literally, I guess that is weird. They'll have two shoots of getting in the car, and the first one's in French and the second one's in English. Like,
it's a lot of work. It's like to do it at both, but that's why we try to prioritize different situations. Yeah. And anyways, our main language with the team is in English. So like, if our videographer is there filming us and we're speaking to the engineer about like strategy or whatever, English, it's like English. So
yeah, that makes sense.
That's why we decided to do that YouTube channel there. And
So going back a couple steps then, you started driving, you came over to Europe, and then when did you start driving in like the competitions? Like when did that happen?
So when I came to Europe and I moved to England, 2013, I started racing Formula 4 and the British Formula Renault. So there was a couple different championships, but nowadays Formula 1 made like a ladder, right? So to get to Formula 1, you do karting, then you go from cars, you go to Formula 4.
Yeah.
Formula 3, Formula 2, which my brother's in now, and then you get to Formula 1.
Right.
So at the time I came here, I was racing the equivalent of Formula 4.
Yeah.
And I won the British Formula Renault Championship that year, and then I won the Asian Formula 3 Championship, then I won the World Series Championship, and then I...
And this is racing for a team, though, right?
Yeah, different teams.
Because that's what I find... So a thing that maybe other people don't get is you're not like, you don't compete as kind of yourself. You do compete as yourself, but you are always attached to kind of like almost like
Josh,
a brand.
It's very easy. The car that they're not driving is not their car.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are the pilot.
Yes.
Somebody else owns the car and is making sure that car is the absolute pinnacle perfect piece of material for them to drive.
I want them to tell me this, Jelly.
he does a very good job at explaining it.
It's also not just car brands, is it?
So in the junior series, like F2, F3, F4, it's a single make category. So all the cars are the same, basically.
Yeah.
But they're not. Like, there are better teams that prepare the cars better, but they're the same equipment for everybody.
Right.
Where in Formula One, there's teams that make their own engines, make their own cars, so then the cars are different. Right.
Yeah.
And how, kind of jumping ahead a bit, but how, when someone wins a race, out of interest, what do you guys think the proportion is on how much of that was the car and how much of it was the driver?
Well, that depends on the championship, like I just explained.
Yeah, I think it depends on the championship, but obviously... People always say, Formula One matters more about the car. I mean, it does because every team is developing their own car. Yeah. So if you give a driver a piece of junk, like, you're not going to go anywhere.
Sure.
But if you put as well a driver that's mediocre, he's also not going to win. So it's like...
Right, okay. I'm curious about, because like, obviously there are some of the top drivers, but hypothetically, if they were in one of the cars of one of the not as good drivers in F1, they wouldn't win, or much more unlikely to win.
But I think that because Formula One, it's like you have 20 drivers there and probably like 8 reserve drivers. So let's say you have 20 drivers on the grid. Those are like the 20 best almost. So like those guys are so close
best
to each other anyways.
World.
It's like the mediocre driver, there was not mediocre, he's like amazing driver.
Right.
He would, if he goes to the best car from a mediocre, for sure he would still have a very good chance at winning. Because you still got, like, imagine football. How many players do you have playing in the Premier League?
Yeah.
Now, if you take that and you just get like the 25 best or whatever, and you put them there, then imagine like all those guys are very good.
This is something that people fail to understand, in my opinion, how rare Formula One seats are. They're extremely rare, all right? It's a world championship. So on the world's level, you've got 20 seats. 20. And a lot of these guys have multiple year contracts. So there's some drivers out there who've been Formula One drivers for 10 plus years. That makes it 19 seats. You know what I mean? Like, it is so
difficult to break through.
Rare. It's incredible. Like, it's like a world league. Like, it's incredible.
So for you guys to be working your way up the chain, were you changing teams, or have you stuck with the same teams to get to where you are now?
So in the junior series, you change teams, right? You can explain it.
Yeah. So in the junior series, obviously you go, you're obviously in each year you can maybe do another, if you have a really good year with a team, you can repeat the year and, you know, try and, let's say you didn't win the championship, you can try and go for it in the second year. In my case, like, last year I was in a team called Sharuz, which is a Czech team, and they're a pretty small team in Formula 2, but everyone there works really well together, and I was living in Prague, and it was a rookie year for me, and I had a really good season. I was fighting for top three until the last round, and then I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to join the Red Bull team. So, and they have a junior team, and then I moved. That's why I moved here, because then I switched teams to a team called Carlin Racing, which is based in the UK, and I'm doing another year of Formula 2, but with a different team.
Right.
I just quickly want to touch on that. So you are in the Red Bull Junior Academy, which essentially is an academy for younger drivers to prepare them for Formula 1. Is that essentially what it is?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. So it's a junior team. There's in Formula 2, there's 6 junior drivers right now. Yeah. So you basically, if you watch the Formula 2 race, you'll probably see a lot of Red Bull colors, because there's a lot of Red Bull liveries. So.
Yeah, right.
Out of the 22 cars, there's 6 that
have. So Red Bull in Formula 1 has 2 seats, right? One has another a contract for another 5 years. So for the next 5 years, hypothetically speaking, there's only one potential seat available.
But then they normally have so normally how it works, Red Bull has the two, obviously Red Bull Racing team, and then they have AlphaTauri as well.
Okay.
Which is their,
so to explain this for Josh, all right, what does AlphaTauri stand for if you translate it from Spanish to English?
It's like Alpha Bull, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
Alpha Bull.
It's like, I think it's basically Red Bull's team, all right?
Right.
But it's just
Is this how they get around with getting more seats, by just changing their name slightly?
I think so. I think it's like they use it as their B team. So like if they have
B team in Formula 1.
Yeah. So if they have like a promising young guy coming from Formula 2, let's say out of the 6 junior drivers they have in F2, one of those guys is like the best one, then they would go and put them in this
team. They would put them in the B team for Formula 1 to then eventually select one for the A team in Formula 1.
Yes.
So Jelly knows.
It's incredible that out of these 20 drivers, out of these 20 seats that you have in Formula 1, there's still a teams and B teams, and maybe potentially some years even C teams.
But so Enzo, you're going to be fighting your peers to get to move up the chain effectively. You need to be better than those people that you're with.
How are you doing?
Yeah, this year has been a tough start, a really difficult start. So there's 14 rounds to the championship, and now there's 11 rounds
to go.
And the first 3 race weekends, so the first 2 was good, then Melbourne was not good. We had a lot of pace. We were really quick, but it just, nothing came together. I missed the line in qualifying by like half a second. So I was on a really good lap in qualifying at Melbourne to qualify like, I think, P4, P3. And just as I was crossing the line, the red flag came out.
Nah.
So your lap doesn't count. And I ended up finishing 16th. Right. And then the races, it didn't go well.
Can you explain to Josh what a red flag is?
So basically a red flag is, if there's a car stopped on track or a car has crashed,
right?
And
they have to stop the session.
Yeah, so they have to go and get the car because the car cannot make it back to the pits.
Yeah,
they will have to red flag the session, which means every car that's on track needs to go to the pits at a safe speed,
right?
Keep a consistent speed as well, and you cannot overtake when the red flag is out. So that's very important because you can get a penalty if you overtake when the red flag is out.
It's basically a pause button.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So why did that mess you up though, right at the end?
So I was, you know, I was doing my lap and finishing, came out of the last corner, and I'm, you know, basically I finished my lap on the dash. But as soon as I was crossing the finish line, the red flag came out. So just before I crossed the finish line, the red flag came out. So basically,
pause.
Yeah. So anytime that crosses the finish line, it doesn't count anymore.
Right.
And that's where that he was qualifying for his starting position, which is super important.
Yeah. So it was very, and then they didn't resume the session anymore. So because it was towards the end, so I ended up finishing 16th, but I should have been.
I mean,
like
that
fourth.
Sounds super unfair.
It was very frustrating. Yeah, it was very frustrating.
It's not unfair, Josh, just, because the same rules apply to everyone.
Yep.
Yeah.
So hypothetically speaking, the team should have sent Enzo out a second earlier.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, you know, Vic, yeah, he knows. He knows a little bit too much.
I feel like he's working with some teams. Or something.
I have a feeling that I'm starting my own team, guys.
Yeah. That's no, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's. The team is also me because we all work together.
I'm never gonna
go back and blame the team. Oh, this you guys should have sent me out 10 seconds or no, because we work together and we make the decisions together. It just didn't go our way that day. It was very frustrating because Melbourne was qualifying was extremely important because it's a difficult track to overtake. So yeah, I was extremely frustrated. It's been a difficult first three rounds, but we have a lot of pace. There's still 11 rounds to go. A lot of points on the table. So, yeah, I'm going to make a very strong comeback.
Nice, man.
Good.
We're really like, I'm rooting for you, man.
Thank you.
I don't know if I'm going to be at any races this year. I've been to so many Formula One races, which, by the way, Josh, okay, like maybe I need to explain everything to this guy. Right? On a Formula One race day, they also hold Formula Two races. I think this year as well, Formula Three races.
Formula Three races as
well. Yeah. Porsche Cup?
Yeah, Porsche Cup as well.
So basically, right, it's a giant circus traveling over the world, hosting all these championships at different circuits.
Right. But you said you would take me to a race at some point.
I did, yeah. I am really hoping for Silverstone this year. I mean, it would be nice, but as a content creator, I have two options, all right? Buy a ticket. Which everybody, the ticket costs money, but everybody essentially has the same opportunity unless they're sold out, or hope for an invite.
Well, you have our invitation.
You have
both of you guys.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious.
You have our invitation. Seriously.
If I'm at the Formula One race, I can always ask for a pass with Haas and stuff. So if you guys ever want to come in as well, with Formula Two with Enzo.
That's great, guys.
So you
really
guys can invite us.
Yeah, of course.
That's
you guys
cool.
can have guests. So I've been invited by McLaren before, Mercedes, and I think Williams. So they were nice enough to get me on.
Is he
board.
Name dropping? Is that name?
Name dropping. So the thing is, right? Like they don't really ask anything like from me, and the drivers didn't know me either. But like they just wanted some social things and. They wanted to record it. And I don't ask money for it or anything. I'm just like thankful to be able to come to a race.
So I've seen other people get invited before though. So yeah. And that's
the one thing is though, then that with an invitation, you still don't have a seat.
But you're like to watch from?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're there in the garage and
so you didn't
standing.
Have a Josh doesn't understand
the garage.
Yeah, so you don't have a So you don't have a seat.
It's not like in a the grandstand garage. Ticket. Yeah.
So you're like you're watching. You're still watching the race from the TV.
Yeah.
But you're
there
inside
the team. Yeah.
Which I think is very cool.
It's incredible. I mean,
but sometimes you can't even see the car when you're there. When you have like the paddock pass.
Yeah.
People are like, "Oh, that's awesome!" It's like, and I have some guests that comes like, "But where do I see the car?" It's like, "Oh, you can see them like pulling out of the garage." Like, you can't go to the corner.
But if you're in a seat. How much of the race can you even see?
Every time they come by.
Yeah.
Right.
Depends on the track.
Maybe
as
can I ask you guys like what like Formula 2, let's start there. What's like the top speed you guys are going at?
So at Monza, last year I reached 335 kph.
Kilometers per hour.
What is that in miles per hour?
Probably 210, 220,
something like that.
Like 190.
190?
Yeah.
All right.
No, I think it's more.
300. 210? I don't think you get
that. No, 200, around yeah, 205. 200, okay.
Damn. All right. Well, it, in other words, it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
What's like top speed in Formula One?
No, it's like probably, I'd say like 380.
380?
Yeah.
It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't want to flip at that speed.
Half the max speed.
Yeah, like 370 of an airplane. Yeah.
Half the max speed of an airplane.
Thing about Formula One is it's not the straight line speed, it's the cornering speed. So right. That's in Formula One, the amount of downforce they have, like the amount of speed, the amount of G's they're pulling through a corner is what, for me as a driver, is what is impressive. I know for you guys, like, oh, the speed down the straight is very quick.
Yeah, but when you drive the Formula One car for the first time, it's the speed you can carry through the corner. So, like, you know how airplanes have wings so they can fly?
Yeah. Yeah,
we have wings.
Yeah.
So we have wings in the opposite direction to make us like be stuck to the ground.
Yeah, okay.
So the F1 car is like by far the car that's most like stuck to the ground.
So you're
like
planted.
You can go through a corner. Yeah. If you're going through a roundabout and you're with like a very heavy and truck or whatever, you can feel the car going like this. Imagine going like a super low car that's like literally glued to the ground. You can go through the roundabout.
Talking about glue, all right? So, when you're driving all these speeds, all right, the only thing that's touching the ground are your tires. So essentially, the entire purpose of all your mechanics and downforce creating downforce is to make sure that your tires are stuck to the ground. Now, what also happens is that these tires get warm, all right, and they get extremely hot. You can start smelling the rubber. Now, when they get extremely hot, Josh, what happens when rubber gets hot?
It melts.
Yeah, and what happens then? It's sticky.
Okay.
These cars are actually glued to the road.
Yeah.
But if you drove really fast, do you think you could flip it around a corner?
No.
You just
because it's so low. The car is like so low. You're like this much from the ground. So like imagine, obviously if it was like a truck.
Less than an inch, right?
Less than an inch. So if you're like within a truck, obviously if you're going super quick, you're like flip it. But the car is like, it's like super so low. Like my head is just probably like
so
here.
That would be, you'd have to be really skillful to flip it.
Yeah, to flip it. You're going to need some like.
So that
like,
could be a new sport. Flipping an F1 car.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be fun. I mean,
it'd be like a bodybuilder.
A bodybuilder could probably flip the car. Yeah. I want to ask you guys something. Why are seats in Formula One called seats when you're technically laying down?
I guess because it's like it's actually like a little bucket, right? It's not
yeah,
like a seat.
Yeah, it's like a little.
They're called bucket
little,
seats.
It's like a little glove.
Yeah.
So when you sit inside you, it's molded to your body.
You specifically, or just like anyone?
Anyone. So basically, okay. In Formula One, Formula Tour,
specifically for you, right?
Yeah, just for me. So we mold our seats. So we get a molding of our whole. We do a seat fit before the season starts. Basically, we have to go to the race team. We have a gentleman there that just specifies on seat fitting, and he has all the materials to do it. And it takes approximately about. Depends on the driver, but for me, it took me 8 hours to do my seat.
Jesus, which, so picky.
Yeah,
because your driver takes longer. I do it much faster. Yeah. But
20 minutes.
Yeah, it molds your body so that when you're seated in the car, you're perfectly comfortable and you have the support for when you're, you know.
I don't know why I had in my mind that I just assumed you kind of get in and you just like.
Adjust the pedals.
Right. And there we go. you've got like a manual one. You just pull up at the bottom and you just skirt it back and forth.
I'm sure when your grandfather was racing, it was a little bit more manual like that. Were there seats being manually?
It wasn't manual, but it was much more, I think, more, you know, old school style. Yeah. Not as perfect. Everything nowadays.
Like pillows. Like,
they even had.
Yeah,
like, they even had to let go of the steering wheel to change gears.
Yeah.
We said they have pillows.
No, I don't think they did.
I'm sure I was watching something on YouTube that like in the 50s, 1950s when Formula One first started, like sometimes if a driver wanted to adjust something, I saw that on YouTube. I don't know.
There's a lot of facts on YouTube.
Yeah, so I heard that you like to adjust the seat, you could just like put some pillows or something. Nowadays we can actually do that. Like if I'm having a bit of a if I have a bit of a cramp on my lower back, I feel like something's bumping into me. I can put not a pillow, but we can put like memory foam.
Yeah.
To make it softer, or we can get the knife, shave the seat off.
Yeah. So do you have any do you have any temperature control in there?
No. That's for me is the toughest thing. Oh. Is the heat. Jesus. Especially like I race closed cockpit cars as well.
Yeah.
So like the car's fully closed, but it gets to like probably 50 degrees Celsius inside the car. And like you're in there for like 2 hours.
How do you breathe, dude?
Yeah, dude. Like that's the toughest part. It's like I struggle sometimes with dehydration. Like my muscles start cramping when I get out of the car and stuff. And
oh my God.
It's bad. Yeah.
But that's when electrolytes come into play.
Yeah, that's why you need to drink a lot.
So before our races, you know, 2 days before we already start, you know, drinking electrolytes to avoid
cramping and stuff. You gotta make sure you're super hydrated.
So. I always thought electrolytes were just like a hype.
No, no, it helps. It helps replace it.
I don't think you need it for playing gaming videos.
Hey, man, I don't know about all that. Damn. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible, though.
Yeah, it's very...
So, like, over the years, a lot of things have changed. And one of those things I wanted to touch on is safety, all right? You guys are essentially... risking your lives by driving these cars.
Yeah, obviously the safety has improved massively throughout the years. Of course. Obviously like in back in the 70s or 80s, the drivers would race, and when they would crash, the chances of dying was very high because the car would sometimes just explode. Now with, you know, the protection in the car and stuff, it's much harder for a driver to get injured and as well have a fatal crash. But it still does happen. It is a dangerous sport. Some people, you know, sometimes forget that. We've had very bad accidents
before. Can we talk about that? Can we talk about Enzo and what was your, like, what was the worst crash you've had?
So you want to talk about yours first? Or
yeah, whoever wants to go first.
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah, so I had a pretty bad accident at the end of 2021. It was towards the end of the season. It was one of, I think... it was my second race in Formula 2 because I had jumped in with a bit of the season left. And it was an accident in the start. Pocher stalled the car, and I had a really good start. I was coming. I was in the draft of someone else in the slipstream, and that guy moved
We have slipstreams in GTA.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah. They're great. Sorry, you go on.
Is it strong, though? Is it?
Yeah, like
it?
That's the best way to overtake in GTA, is to get
really?
The slipstream.
So you get it. That's crazy.
All right. You continue. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool, though.
It's not that. It's not that cool.
So you were... So it was at the start of the race.
When the lights went out, and then Pocher stalled. So he didn't...
Pocher is the other driver.
Yeah. Pocher is the other driver. And I had a really good start. I was going to overtake this one guy. And then boom. Yeah, it just went straight
in. You crashed into him.
The crash into the guy standing still.
Yeah. So it was a massive crash. And
What speed do you think you hit him?
I hit him... I don't know. I haven't checked that. But I know the G's.
Let me explain a bit. Because I was there standing on his start when that happened.
You were watching.
Yeah, I was watching. Then people were like, oh, your brother had a massive crash, whatever. And I was there in the pit lane. Obviously, the start happens right next to the pit lane. And I went to where his car was. And I saw the ambulances arriving. I'm like, Jesus, it was like, this must be something big. When I looked at his car, his pedals, like where you put your feet at, the pedal and brake was like out of the car. And I was like, Jesus, like he must have shattered his legs. Because I got in an accident before then. I'll get into after, but I broke my legs. And I was like, he for sure broke his legs. And I hadn't seen him yet. He was inside the ambulance. And I was like, my God, like my heart just like stopped. And then I went into the ambulance with him. And I saw that he was, you know, conscious at the time. And luckily he had only broken his, he shattered his heel in the accident. But he was super lucky. I think because he was so small, he's small.
So it's something very good, actually. Like people joke around, oh, you're so short, this and that. So actually being short in this situation that I was in, I was actually very fortunate, because when you sit inside the car, you're basically with your knees and the pedals are there. And then you have this foam that's on top
that to protect normally, your knees. Yeah, you normally use it like when you're going through the corners, so you don't get bumps on your like bruises from hitting just the
on your knees, right?
Yeah, so you have a protective foam. Basically, my knees are the foam just starts about here. Yeah. So when I crashed, my knee was able to come back. So if I was taller,
you would have stuck.
Yeah, I would have gotten stuck, and then all of this would have shattered. So that's why about being like short, I was very fortunate.
This is why Jelly's so into it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been bullied my entire life about being a short guy.
How tall are you?
I'm 172 centimeters.
Oh, I'm 171.
Yeah. So I'm 1 meter. 67. So
we're all like 5'6", 5'8".
Yeah.
How tall are you?
I'm 180 centimeters. So.
Wow. So I've been bullied my entire life, and maybe I should sometimes just been it helps. Yeah, I should have just been a Formula driver. Yeah. Then it would have been okay.
Yeah.
But you were okay.
I was fine. The good thing about it is I don't remember anything of the crash, so I don't. Yeah.
That's a great.
You don't remember anything.
No. Yeah, I don't remember.
Did anything. You hit your head?
No, I don't know. Obviously, it was such a big, like, blow, so many G's that you just...
Do you know how
you
many
get,
G's?
You get knocked out. So,
I think it was over 80, right?
Yeah, over 80 G's.
80
G's. Frontal G. So, yeah, it was...
How many G's is a jet fighter pool?
About, like, 6, 7, 8.
You did 80 G's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still don't know what that means, but...
You don't know what G's are?
Yeah, I know what G's are, but I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what that's
Earth
like.
Earth is pulling you by one G.
Yeah, you can explain it more, but it doesn't... Yeah.
So, like, basically, the way the time that he stopped, he went from, I don't know, 130 miles an hour to zero was, like, super fast because he hit, like, basically a dead stop. So it went from, like, 130 to, like, nothing in, like, a split second. So it was, like, your body was, like...
Bruh. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was... It was a hard time in my career because it was obviously as a racing driver you have an accident like this and then you know
could be the end.
Yeah, you never know. So it was a very difficult moment, but luckily I was very fortunate. Like my brother said, I it could have been much worse. I made a very good recovery and I came.
How long did it take to recover?
About 2 months. 2 months. But obviously, I came back and I was still not like 100% in the first couple races of last year. But yeah, I had an unbelievable rookie season last year. It was a great comeback.
Nice job,
man. Yeah, so it was actually a cool story to look back at now. Yeah, you know, because obviously when you go through these tough moments, you know the recovery time, all that when you're at home and you know you have a lot of time to think, reflect, and you know when you're going through these difficult moments, I think you come out stronger.
Were you lucky that it was also the end of the season?
Yeah.
That gave you more time to recover before the next season?
Yeah, 100%.
So when the next season started, were you good to go? Or
I still wasn't...
You weren't fully recovered?
Yeah, I wasn't fully recovered. So I was in the first race weekend in Bahrain. I had a lot of pain on my right heel. Like it was still...
Yeah.
It was
from
still not...
From a crash months ago.
Yeah. I was still...
And just back in the car, man.
And do you when you get back in, you feel a bit rusty? Like do you have to know what I mean?
Yeah, well not really, because I came back and obviously we were already driving the simulator a month before at home. Okay. I shouldn't have been driving the simulator, but I was already wanting to go back in. I was driving with like racing and doing streams on Twitch, which that was helping me you know, to get back up to speed. It actually helped. So yeah, when I came back in, took like one or two laps and I was already on it. So yeah,
it's like how do I say it? Embedded in their
embedded.
Brain.
Embedded.
Yeah. Embedded.
So
it's not bread.
So no, it's not bread.
No, embedded. Is
so
prefer bread.
So Pietro, then did you had a worse crash?
Yeah, it was different. So mine was in 2018. I was racing at Spa, which is like a famous track. They have a very fast corner there called Eau Rouge. So it's like uphill, flat out. As I was going through the corner, I was racing this LMP1 car. So it's like this prototype car, 1,000 horsepower, super fast. And I lose steering in the middle of the corner. And I go straight in the wall. Luckily, Enzo forgot the crash. I still remember mine. I hit the wall. I remember just before, usually when we're about to crash, I never was scared. Never. At this time before, like a split second before crashing, I was like, fuck, this is gonna be a
tough one.
Gonna be a big impact. Yeah. And then I hit the wall
And initially, I didn't feel anything. The car wasn't had a door. The door opened on the crash, and I unbuckled. When I went to climb out, I was like, well, I have a lot of pain in my legs. And I looked down, and my legs were, like, completely, like, tangled. Like, this part of my leg was, my foot was up here. My right ankle was all the way to the right. Like, my foot was here.
They were pointing towards the moon.
Yeah. It was, like, seriously, my leg was, like, in a Z. And I just looked down. And when you look down, and I think because the adrenaline, initially, I didn't feel it. But when I saw it, that's when the pain came in.
Yeah.
And for them to take me out of the car, it took them like 45 minutes to an hour.
And it was dangling, like it was just...
Dude, it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life.
But it was a composite.
It was a compound fracture, like the bones were out and stuff. And I remember the marshal was there, like, and the doctors were like holding my hand, and I was like, just please get me out. It took them 45 minutes, and when they lifted me, that's when I passed out. Then the airlifted me to the hospital, and I had surgery that night.
How long ago was that?
That was 2018. So that was five years ago. But
How long does it take to recover from two legs that are tangling on?
So I actually came back very quick. I went to Indianapolis to do all my recovery because I was meant to race the Indy 500 that year.
Oh.
So I had the motorhome there ready and everything. But I actually went there to the track to do all my physical therapy. I stayed in the motorhome with my mom, and they had a medical center there. And I would go every morning, do physical therapy, and I would do all my training, like upper body training. So I was in a wheelchair, but training my upper body. And 2 months after the accident, I was back racing an IndyCar. My leg was still broken. One of my left leg was still broken, but I put this carbon fiber brace on it. That I would use under my suit.
That's pretty cool.
And it would protect it, yeah. And I was able to race with a broken leg because I had this opportunity in IndyCar and I didn't want to give it up.
So you raced the Indy 500?
No, so I raced, I had to miss the Indy 500, but I did other races.
Yeah.
And I had good results. It was
with
my best
leg.
Yeah, and that's what got me the opportunity to test with Haas at the end of the season of that year, yeah. So.
And I quickly want to touch on that as well. You got the opportunity with Haas because they also lost a driver. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I joined Haas in end of 2018. And then in 2020, Roman Grosjean had the big accident, which was on Netflix and stuff.
Have you seen this accident, Josh?
Nope.
He was very
lucky.
It
was on my to-do list of stuff.
I told him, you have to see like this accident because the thing is about the accident, it for people who don't know the sport that well, you can see like the amount of risk that these guys are carrying, right? So basically what happened is that he crashed into a barrier, his car exploded with a massive fireball and split in half.
Right.
And the guy's still sitting in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. He couldn't get out. That was the problem.
He was in fire. He was on flames.
Yeah.
So how's he doing today?
No, he recovered well. Like, he was able to finally get out. And because Formula One have all the cameras, they have all the scenes. And it's, like, incredible seeing him, like, run out, like, come out of the car on fire.
He walks, jump out. Like, in a way, it's, like, the coolest shot ever. Like,
it is a very
cool
shot.
You kind of think, like, oh, like, damn, he's in trouble. He's in huge trouble. And then you see this guy standing up out of his seat.
Because he was in there for, like, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, I didn't watch it live, which that would have been terrifying because then you don't know what's wrong with the driver and if he's okay and whatnot. But I saw it on Netflix and they did a fantastic job at making it.
Was that on the
epic, which is kind of epic. It's kind of weird as well because like he got seriously hurt, but the Netflix.
So
like,
is that on the Netflix series, The Drive?
Drive to Survive.
Yeah. Drive to Survive. Okay.
Yeah.
So. He's not racing anymore then?
No, he is. He made a recovery and he's racing an Indy car now. He's actually doing very well there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah.
So he just had a couple of burns in his hands, right?
Yeah, so he had severe burns in his hands. Severe burns. But other than that, he was fine, which is super lucky, man. If he would have like passed out or broken an ankle or something, couldn't get out of the car, he would have been like toast, Because he wouldn't got... For them to put out those flames, it would have like taken too long.
No, it's fuel. Like you don't just put that out. What I find interesting, right, is that these crashes, Enzo, you severely hurt your legs, broken ankle, right?
Broken heel.
Pietro, you broke both your legs. And this other guy, he severely burned his hands. Are we not seeing something here? Like, the only tools that you essentially need to drive a car are the ones that get damaged.
Yeah. Those are the most exposed ones, especially the legs. Because when you have, like, frontal impact and stuff,
it's crazy.
The car snaps. And
are there not other ways to...
Nowadays, it's like... Compared to how it was back then, nowadays the cars are much safer.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
FIA has done an incredible job. You know, the cars nowadays are really safe.
Back in the day, you would have let's say back there was more cars in the F1 grid, but you'd have like 26 to 30 drivers starting the season, and you'd know that by the end of the season, maybe one or two would die.
Yeah, but back in the day, it was like when our grandfather was racing in the 70s.
So that's why back in the day, it was easier to get into it as well.
Yeah, probably. No, honestly, my granddad had the opportunity because the driver died.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Seriously. He was the reserve driver, and I forgot the name of the driver now, but the driver died, and that gave my grandfather the opportunity to get into the seat. It's crazy.
It's kind of a messed up sport as well.
So you're with the safety rules now though.
Yeah, I'm reserved for Haas and F1. And
so you're punching the air that they made it safer.
I mean, listen, you never want to like...
Just realize what you said. You don't want people to die, Josh. So what are you talking about?
I know. But everyone wants an opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Maybe like a stomach ache. You like some shrimp? I got some special shrimp for you. Come to my friend's restaurant.
Jesus Christ.
Specifically pick this on the menu.
Jesus.
Yeah. So when you are a reserve driver, is that the sort of like it's you may or may not race, like it can be last second that you race?
Yeah, that's what happened when the Grosjean had the accident. I jumped in for him in two F1 races in 2020. I also test the car throughout the year, so helping with testing development. We do a lot of simulator work. Mm-hmm. So F1 teams have like these professional simulators, like $1 million simulators that they do all the development in. So we're in that a lot. But I also race other things alongside.
Right.
So I have to attend most of the F1 races, like 90% of them. And then I'm also racing endurance races, so like 24-hour races and stuff like that.
And I think...
Le Mans? Is that 24-hour? Yeah.
I don't know... This is more so coming from the not understanding it too much, but I think it might be interesting for other people. So are you like as the reserve part, is that like a part-time job? And then you've got like other jobs. Like, do you get paid for the individual things?
So I think it's like it's like I could be the reserve driver, but as well do other racing stuff.
But being the reserve driver, that's kind of like that's like one job. Effectively.
Yeah, it's one job,
and then whatever salary for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then whatever I have, anything else with other racing, that's something apart that I do.
But they have a requirement on like a minimum amount of hours you spend working with them.
So I have a requirement of how many races I need to attend. So I could only, if I have clashes with other commitments like races, I could only miss a certain amount of F1 races.
And are there other reserve drivers?
Yeah, are in other teams. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Does everyone have a reserve driver or not?
But some teams like don't have it and they use like another team's reserve driver. It's like a bit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Some teams, they work together, have like, for example, Mercedes, they develop their own engines, but,
they do.
Yeah. And they rent them out to other teams that, for example, McLaren has a Mercedes engine.
Williams.
So there's
McLaren drives a Mercedes engine, Josh. Does that make any sense to you?
Not particularly, but.
No, exactly.
So. There's now in Formula One, there's three manufacturers, right, for engines.
Oh no, I think there's much more.
Honda,
Ferrari, Mercedes, Alpine, which is Renault.
Well, Renault.
Can I ask you a question, Enzo? Your name Enzo. Did your parents name you Enzo because of Enzo Ferrari?
No, so it was actually my my great grandfather and great grandmother that told my. Gave the idea to my mom to
name you Enzo.
Enzo. So if you notice, like my brother's name is Pietro and my sister's name is Valentina, which is all like
Italian names.
Yes. Yeah, so we
You guys have Italian heritage as well?
Yes. Or? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wow. We do. Sorry, my great-grandfather was from Italy.
Wow. You guys speak Italian?
We have, yeah, I speak Italian. So I was, when I was like 15 years old, I signed with Ferrari.
Yeah.
And I was living in Maranello for 4 years. So I learned Italian. I was, yeah. I
now, Maranello is a city of Ferrari. So everything Ferrari,
Ferrari is town.
Yeah. And who's Enzo Ferrari?
The Enzo. Creator of Ferrari.
Yeah. The founder.
It's helpful,
the founder.
It's helpful context.
Yeah, it is helpful context. Yes. It is the Ferrari guy. Yeah. Like, it's Enzo Ferrari, it's his name. And the ultimate Ferrari, essentially, well, is LaFerrari or the Enzo Ferrari.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Oh, right. The Enzo Ferrari is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it'd be interesting to learn a bit more now about what you guys are doing outside of the racing, though. So you guys obviously have got the t-shirts on right now, the Fittipaldi. So you guys have got like a business together?
No, it's like it's just sort of like it's our brand. I mean, like, when we first started doing Twitch streaming, we're like, oh, we're gonna create Enzo's channel and my channel. But I was like, no, why don't we create the Fittipaldi brothers channel and do everything together? I think that's cooler. Yeah. We live together, we're always together at the race weekends and stuff. So that's what we started, you know. So doing all the Twitch streaming, streaming on Kick as well now, and on our YouTube channel. So we just, it's a Fittipaldi brothers, a dream to get to F1. Yeah.
I mean,
is that quite common with drivers right now to be doing like vlogs and stuff to like
you see it more and more, right?
It's more and more.
It's getting more and more popular.
Yeah, we were
one of the first ones. I think the very first one that I think was Lando Norris.
Yeah,
he was
doing the Twitch stream and stuff, and then like we started doing it, but like we started doing it a lot. We're like, if we do, we got to like full
man
on it.
I wanted to say, right, Josh, like Formula One, Josh, we used to be kind of like a sport that only old people watched.
Mm.
Yeah, right? If I can say that.
Yes.
And because of Netflix, for the first time ever, younger people are now interested in the sport.
It was because of the Netflix show.
Yeah, I think
Netflix helped dramatically, right?
But
especially in the US.
Yes.
Because now there's three U.S. races on the calendar.
Yeah, Las Vegas this year now, yeah.
So, and previously there was maybe one and sometimes none.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the way that Formula One is on digital media, I think they're much better than any other sport.
And this is because an American company essentially bought the publishing rights for Formula One.
Yeah.
So they're heavily pushing it in the U.S. And all of a sudden they're on board. And like young people are watching it now all over social media. And that's why it makes sense for Formula One drivers to also start social media careers essentially on the side, right? Yeah. I mean, all the guys, or most of the guys, have Instagram channels.
Yeah,
everyone.
And you know, you mentioned Lando Norris started doing some vlogging back in the day.
Yeah,
yeah, I think he was the first.
I mean, he's not here, but I actually met Lando when he was, I believe it was a Formula 2 driver, and he was doing a vlog.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. So that's when McLaren gave me the invite, and they were like, "Oh, we have this one guy. He's an F2 driver, but he'd love to have you in his vlog and do a simulator race with him in a motorhome, right?"
Yeah.
So we did that, and then I found out next year he was an F1 driver. I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool."
That's really cool. Yeah.
I wonder how that's gonna evolve over time, because so football, for example, there's like the celebritism of players is like a big part of it, right? And you will have players that their value is nowadays, it more correlates to their sort of celebritism and success more than their skills sometimes.
Like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, like it's
getting paid $500 million a year.
Like, is that really worth it for the skill? There's probably someone maybe as good or very close to being as good for a lot cheaper. Do you think that now that drivers are creating their own socials, building their own sort of individual sort of following, that's going to have a similar effect where, because I think there's drivers even now that have been around for a long time and because they draw big audiences. Do you think that's going to grow even more now that drivers are able to sort of do that themselves?
You're asking do you think drivers will become mainstream celebrities?
Mainstream celebrities, but I'm more thinking on the lines of, there will be value just from in having a driver on a team just because they are really like have a big following.
Yeah.
Not just their skill.
Yeah, I think it does play a value, but I think to be able to get to that level, you have to be good as well.
Sure.
It only comes through success.
Yeah.
But then I think it only happens and maybe then a driver was good and then ends up kind of, you know, not performing as well, but his status or, you know, his hype behind him, I think we can name a guy.
I mean, all I'm thinking about is Lewis Hamilton. I think Lewis Hamilton, he's like the biggest Formula One star of the modern age, right? Yeah. Hypothetically, you know, statistically, I think top three best driver ever.
Yeah.
But
he got to that level because he also won seven world championships, you know?
Yeah. He's got seven?
Seven.
Seven.
He won seven world championships, 7 years of being the best.
But I think what the point that I'm sort of mentioning is that I think as it evolves, it's going to become less about the skill, potentially. Now, the reason I say that is there's a football team that... I'm not actually into football that much, but it's a good comparison. There's a football team that I think Ryan Reynolds owns and some other...
Oh, yeah, guy. I saw
And they're that, like man. A League 5 team or whatever. But there's because of the celebritism surrounding that team, even though they're not that good, there's more people watch those games than some of the Premier League games.
Really?
Yeah. Just because
it's a story behind it.
Exactly.
As well. I know.
And it's interesting sort of watching the F1 thing from the outside and not really fully understanding it. It's like, it does seem like if you're going to add some more personality into this very just technical skill-based thing,
yeah,
it's going to evolve over time. And it'll be interesting to see how that sort of changes.
No, I can definitely see that happening. I don't think we got to that point yet. But I could definitely, because at the end of the day, people want a story and they want to watch it because of the story, you know? So whether it's from a sport or something else, if you can create a sport that has a much more intriguing story behind every team or driver or whatever, that's what's going to sell.
I feel like Liberty Media, the new publisher or owner of their publishing rights, has been doing a really great job.
In the U.S.,
Oh, no, they're doing it worldwide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, they're an American company who bought Formula One, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so basically, right, they're kind of starting to characterize each driver as their own hero, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at the intro before a race, there's like this epic song playing, right? Yeah. And all of the pictures of the drivers are actually, they're like little videos, you know, they stand there and their name comes in. They're like little heroes. Heroes, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like they're starting to do that. They're starting to add
the drama,
character
the
and drama.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Netflix, right, has been really right like throwing fuel on fire when it comes to drama. To keep it on topic. I mean, what is you guys' just like thoughts on that? Like, do you guys watch the Netflix show, or because are you guys in the Netflix show? I mean, you're a Formula 2 driver.
The Formula 2 they don't do.
No,
it's only
Formula 1.
Yeah, it's only Formula 1, and with Formula 2 they do a separate show.
Yeah,
which is called Chasing the Dream, but it's a smaller show that it.
It's on YouTube.
It's on Formula 1's YouTube channel.
Okay,
so they do like weekly episode.
And Pietro?
Yeah, so sometimes I appear, but more in the background when they're like filming Haas and stuff.
Yeah.
Because Formula 1, they have so few episodes, and Netflix, they have like 8 episodes a season. It's so like there's massive storylines that they're not able to cover.
Yeah. Right.
Because like you only have 8 episodes and you got like 23 races in a season.
Yeah.
And 10 teams, so you can't cover everything.
But I've seen like the community, the people who watch F1, and even I think certain drivers been very upset about like some drama that's been created in Netflix that wasn't actually ever there.
I know, yeah. I mean there is that. There is definitely that. Like they dramatize, like they exaggerate things, and I know that they sometimes pull some audio or whatever into a different image capturing site, and it's to like make it, but at the end of
the
day,
radio communication,
like they like change it, they get a radio comm from a race and put it somewhere else just so it makes more sense and makes it more dramatizing. But at the end, it's
entertaining,
it's cool,
dude.
Man. It's entertaining. It's entertaining. I don't care.
But I know, for example, Max Verstappen, Red Bull's driver, he purposely said, I don't want to be on the show. He's back now, I believe, but for seasons long, he said, Netflix.
So do you?
I'm not coming on because I don't want to be dramatized.
You were in the background, but do you have a choice on being on that show? Like, do they ask for permission, or is that just in your contract?
No, it's like because how they do it is they have usually two Netflix crews per race weekend, right?
Yeah.
And for a race weekend, they prioritize, like, let's say, actually one or two teams. So that crew right. will dress as, if they're filming Haas that weekend, they use Haas gear. Obviously, they're walking around with cameras. Oh, and
so, they blend in.
They blend in with the team, kind of.
So they're in shot, even.
Yeah. No, they're oh, not okay, in okay. shot, but like they blend in, so they use the Haas gear, and obviously they have like two cameras.
So you don't feel like there's basically a camera set.
Yeah, because you kind of get used to it.
I mean, there's cameras everywhere anyway, yeah. right?
But I don't think anybody's ever said like, oh, I don't want to be filmed, like a crew or a member.
Except for Max.
Yeah, maybe like a driver.
Well, no. He was fine with being filmed, but he didn't want to go on like separate interviews, right? He didn't want to have one-on-one sessions with Netflix. He was like, no.
Yeah, but basically they're there and they have that big mic thing that they hold on top of everybody. And some crew members and engineers and stuff and team bosses, they're actually mic'd up.
Yeah.
And sometimes they actually forget they're mic'd up.
We know what that's like. Yeah,
you're there the whole day and like...
That's the good thing about this show. You can really get the behind the scenes because they literally forget. It's like, because there's always cameras everywhere anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Jelly have done stage performances before where we get mic'd up and then we walk off and you start chatting. You're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, you start doing your day to day and you're getting used to this Netflix thing and then you just forget you're mic'd up. Start talking crap about some other guy in the past. Jesus
Christ.
Leaks. But then that's the bit that's going to be in the episode. So,
So before we round this podcast off, I want to ask you guys, all right, what's your favorite track?
You want to go first?
Monaco.
Pietro?
I never drove at Monaco, but for me, it's Spa. It's a track I actually crashed and broke my legs, but I love it.
It's a love-hate relationship. It's a love-hate relationship.
Do you ever look at the barrier and be like, my brother?
Yeah, right. I always take a look at it when I'm going by. I love the track, man.
Maybe don't look too long because then you'll crash again.
But the other track I like too is the one I did race the Indianapolis 500. And that event, not only the track, but the event, man.
What do you mean?
It's
an oval. It's not a great track.
Oh. Dude, it's like balls to the wall.
If there's one race that you guys should go to, like if you ever have the opportunity to go to, is watch the Indy 500. Like, go there, go to the event.
It's 300, almost 400,000 people there watching on the oval.
I think for me, it was by far the biggest event I've ever been to. And
I mean, I've watched it live on TV and I thought it was absolutely epic. I couldn't.
Like, unbelievable.
I was like, when I started this, am I really going to watch this car go in laps 200 times? But like, it's fun and it's crazy. And
super fast.
Stuff happens. It's kind of cool.
There was actually another thing as well before we round up. I wanted you guys to rate my driving.
Let's do it.
How do we
go? I've got something that I prepped. Wow.
What is that? Is that a controller?
What?
Oh, I crashed already. This is what I've been doing some practice with. I assume. I don't know if this is even in shot. But I assume that this is similar.
Can I grab that?
I assume this is pretty much what you guys do.
Well, what did you even
so
get? Let it drive on the sofa.
So I've got a go-kart, mini electric car that I've been practicing with. And I was wondering what you guys thought.
It's similar to one of the series you drive in, right?
Oh,
did you see that flip?
Yeah, that was a
flip.
Dude,
that was a good trick. Was that similar to the flip you did when you were 4 years old?
I just wanted you guys to let me know if you thought I had maybe a future in driving.
I think you do, but we need to test it out karting or something sometime.
Okay, fine. Okay,
no, well, I don't think
there are some. I've tracked cars, guys. You know, I'm good.
No. Jelly, I think I've got some more raw talent than you.
Oh, really?
I would actually love to see you, Slogo and Jelly on a 1v1 in a karting.
I think I'd win.
That could be a special podcast episode.
Dude. can we make this happen?
We could get mic'd up and do it on the track.
Is there a rental karting track?
There's a lot of karting tracks around here.
But rental cars.
There's one in front of us. Maybe we'll do that. Anyway.
Oh, that'd be so fun. Guys, thank you so much for being
on.
Coming on.
Thank
you.
Great.
This was amazing, man. I love this.
And maybe we'll see you guys in the garage.
Yes, for sure.
sounded way less cooler than I thought.
Garage.
So.
All
right. Perfect. Great. Cool. There we go. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That was really good.